Hey guys, this is Xenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moonboy News. Well, we had a pretty slow news week, and I'm kidding. It was actually a very busy news week. We had the Tornado Cash ruling come through, and it was a bit of a split decision. I will be giving my reaction on that, and trying to make sense of what's going on with the case and what it means for privacy in cryptocurrency. We'll also be talking about Cubic, the ongoing 51% attack, whether or not it's been effective. The heat has turned up a little bit, but overall the Monero network still working. And yeah, we got some other news as well. Of course, the Monero dump that happened. We're going to kind of break down my thoughts on what might have led to that. And also, Nick Fuentes mentions Monero. So a lot to get to today. But first, we got the Super Chats. You can donate at xmrchat.com/Xenu. And yeah, we got a bunch this week. The first one was a big one from Your Fat Mom. He donates 1 XMR. Thank you so much. There's no message here. He just sent the massive donation. I appreciate it so much, man. It was funny because I check my XMR chats, probably like once or twice a day, see if I got anything trickling in. And, on Monday with the kind of the jury deliberations going on and not really knowing, what's going to happen with Roman Storm. There was some anxiety, I won't lie with you guys. I was feeling kind of nervous about, the situation facing Roman. And then I saw this super chat come in and I just got so pumped up. I was super pumped. So I really appreciate it. Not sure how I feel about your name, Your Fat Mom. Mother Xenu is a saint and she's not fat. But I do very much appreciate the donation. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Anyway, next up, we got a donation from Leo. He sends 0.12 XMR. Damn, another big one. Thank you so much to Leo. He kind of wrote a lot here, so we're going to kind of split this up. He first writes, "Finally found the time to sit down and listen to your manifesto. Excellent piece. Thank you." Yeah, I'm glad you liked it, Leo. Very proud of it. I haven't really talked about it in a while on this program, I guess. But yeah, I wrote it back in April, released it in May. I think it holds up pretty damn well. And, later on today, we're going to be talking about, Nick Fuentes mentioning Monero. And, part of the reason why Monero is being name dropped, and I'm seeing it being name dropped more and more. Yeah, Asmongold, he name dropped it the other day too. I'm just seeing that more and more, and I think the reason for that is because Monero has built up so much clout over the years because of darknet market usage. It's just that because of its constant usage and adoption, people just respect it. It just has that respect from people of like it's actually being used. Actual usage is like rare in cryptocurrency. And this is really the point I try to hammer home in darknet market maximalism. This is just how you should examine the markets. And as we move more and more towards this, world where there's going to be no clearnet, like what we're experiencing now is not probably not going to exist 20 years in the future. Because of that, examining the tools being used in these highly glowing economies that are, that need the highest amount of OPSEC possible, examining those tools, I think is fundamental to understanding what tools like the average person will need in the future. And I'm not saying that everybody is going to be using Tor and Monero in the future, but I'm saying that, the cypherpunks who are living on the fringes of society in the cyber world, at least, away from the clearnet in the future, which is just going to be even worse than it is today. You know, we're going to need these tools to survive. And when you want to convince somebody that something works, you point to actual usage. And we can do that with Monero, because Monero is actually used. It's not some theoretical, you know, or, you know, like you'll read like, oh, this is the most super private thing ever. Yeah, well, it's not being used. Whatever project you're talking about, I don't really give a shit about it. You know, like Joe the mechanic, he's not going to be persuaded by a white paper. You know what I mean? So anyways, okay, so Leo then writes, he says, missed my streak. Sorry, been traveling. Which VPN do you use and why? What are your thoughts on NIM? Thoughts on, quote, the state, end quote. And what do you think about Rothbard's anatomy of the state? All right, so a bunch of questions there, but he did donate a good amount. So I'll answer all of these for you, Leo. First off, hope your travels were well. I am going to be traveling myself in November. I will be announcing that on the show where I'm going, because I'm going to be leaving the country. So we might be able to have some sort of meetup where I plan on going, but I'm not going to announce the location yet. But I am planning something in November. So keep an eye out for that. Or an ear open, I guess. Anyway, he then says, which VPN do you use? I've been using Mulvad. And why? It's what accepts Monero, and other people rep it and support it. That's pretty much it. I don't really have like a undying love for Mulvad. I think it's a VPN. You know, I do use it every day as just part of my privacy repertoire, but I hold the opinion that VPNs ultimately are for privacy usage, absolutely, but it's kind of like a placebo. It's not something I would use in like a highly adversarial situation, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. But it's great, of course, if you want to, like, you know, not have your ISP spy on you, right? Instead, your VPN can spy on you. But like with Mulvad, at least, like, you know, you don't have to give them any of your, you know, like KYC information. You can pay in Monero. So that's cool. So in that respect, I like them. All right. And thoughts on NIM? Yeah, I talked about them in my overview of MoneroCon, because they had a presentation. I mean, I don't really buy into the hype behind them. During their presentation, the guy who was presenting said something like, he had like a infographic, and he was trying to say that NIM was more private than Tor, and I'm just like, come on, dude, that's ridiculous. So I mean, there's like kind of red flags with that. It's also just like shilled a lot, and I'm also not a big fan of projects that use cryptocurrency tokens. I'm just not a fan of that. I guess they do have like this Mixnet service. Apparently it is cool, but I've heard it's very slow. I'm not really sure how many people are using it. I have never used it though, so I don't know. I think I'm mostly turned off by the fact that they're shilling a fucking cryptocurrency token, to be honest with you. And the shilling of their project, I don't know. It just turns me off. So thoughts on the state? Don't like them. And what do you think about anatomy of the state? Yeah, I think that's a really good primer. So that's Rothbard, right? And I think it's a really good primer for like libertarian like thought. It's very short, right? It's like an hour long podcast. If anything, you can like listen to it. I think it does like a pretty good job of like summarizing the state and kind of like my views of that, where it's kind of this machine essentially, and we're kind of feeding that machine with our tax money. it just grows and grows every year. I actually think there's a lot of relation between like libertarian philosophy, and but also cypherpunk philosophy. There's a huge overlap, but like that libertarian philosophy is actually realistic in a cyber world, because you can actually like carve out your own niche communities, and because you could actually have like privacy and freedom, you know, and you could fight against surveillance, and you could actually have a direct impact if you embrace free and open source software. I really think that's going to be a fundamental, you know, thing to learn in the future when these surveillance measures just get worse and worse. I mean, we're going to have KYC on everything, it looks like. Yeah, the state, it's a beast. And for a while, I was like really jaded because I wasn't able to fight against it, right? Because like voting doesn't really do much. And then I discovered, you know, Linux and Monero, and I was like, oh, okay, this is where I belong, because it has that anti-state kind of mindset to it, but it's also actually doing something and moving something forward. There's actually a goal in mind, you know, digital cash. So anyway, that was kind of a rambling answer there, but maybe that satisfied things. So nice to see you again, Leo. I appreciate it. Next up, we got a donation from XMR supporter. He donates 0.028 XMR. And he says, I commented earlier about donating to fund mining. I actually meant an address to be shared on X that anyone could send XMR to on a whim to help fund mining. I would do $50. However, maybe this isn't a good idea due to reasons I haven't considered. Yeah, I mean, the issue with this is just like, it's putting a lot of trust into me. I feel kind of uncomfortable with that. I mean, again, if you want to email me and just say, hey, here's $50. Can you do that? I would do it for you. But yeah, I don't want to have this be a thing where like I have to like provide all this proof for people, because I don't want to do that. Basically, it's just work on my end. Next up, we got a donation from Lazy Boy. He gives 0.01 XMR. Thank you. And he says, yes, good, something like that. That's super easy. He's talking about my Goopax video that I made regarding how to mine Monero with Goopax. So I'm happy that helped you out, man, and I appreciate the donation. Thanks. Okay, we got two more. This one is from Blue Eyes White Dragon. He donates 0.05 XMR. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. And he says, over many years, I've been acquiring XMR without KYC and now have a large amount. How do I offload some of this without being able to explain or show proof where all this money came from, like buying a house? So if you've been buying a lot of Monero or cryptocurrency in general without KYC, that's totally legal, first off. So you didn't break any laws by doing that, right? Because that is just a like a cash to cryptocurrency. Oh, and actually, let me back up. It depends where you are, okay? So the first thing I would say is talk to a lawyer, because like I can't give you advice on this. So like I'll walk through what I would do, and the first thing I would do is like get a lawyer, because like they'll tell you the exact laws of your jurisdiction and like what you need to do to satisfy those types of laws. So I would just do that, actually, because they'll give you the best advice. And when you're dealing with like a lot of money, like, yeah, just talk to someone who'll be able to walk you through. Because like the thing is, in America, if you buy cryptocurrency with cash, that's a non-taxable event, totally normal. However, later on, when you use that cryptocurrency, technically you're supposed to report that as that would be a taxable event. It's a real shame too, because many people who use Monero don't do that. It's really bad. Again, we love when our government buys bombs so people in Palestine can be murdered. We just love that, right, guys? So we love when that happens. But yeah, to your point though, if you are buying, you know, a bunch of cryptocurrency and then you don't have that proof of when you did buy it, then the cost basis gets a little funky. So your lawyer that you should get would probably ask you, okay, do you have the wallet that they're in? Because then you can look at you know, the timestamps of when it was sent to your wallet. So you could then figure out the cost of the Monero, what it was when you purchased it. And then you could figure out the cost basis that way. I don't know, man. This is like a legal thing you'll have to figure out, because if you're selling anything with like a lot of digits, you're gonna get flagged, and you're gonna have to pay some sort of tax. So that's what I would do. By the way, side note, you know, I do talk a lot about, you know, don't use KYC stuff, but it is a completely legitimate use case to buy cryptocurrency for the sake of investing, okay? Some people think I think investing is horrible and I hate when the number goes up. Not the case at all. Like, there's a legitimate reason to invest in cryptocurrency, especially because of scarcity. I get it, okay? And so when you buy a cryptocurrency and later on sell it, get a lot of profit, then you can invest in other things. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And in that case, if you want to, KYC is probably the easiest way of going about that. It's just a fact. So I mean, if you are selling a lot, okay, you might want to find like a, you know, over the counter situation. I don't know. I honestly have no idea how that works. Just talk to a lawyer is what I would tell you, or crypto tax person. It's a whole industry now because there's many people who are in a similar situation as you. All right, and last up, we have a donation from MAVMCQ. He donates 0.022 XMR. And he says, thank you for your service. Well, thank you for that donation, man. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I'm pumped up after this week, man. We got a lot of really big donations. So thank you to everyone who did donate. And as always, if you are listening and you want to hear my comments on whatever, you can donate for next week's show at xmrchat.com/Xenu, and you'll be able to send me whatever you want and I'll comment on it. So there we go. So some show updates, channel updates. Let's see here. What do I do? Yeah, so the video I made this week, the user-friendly video, was about GooPacks. I'll be honest here, it's probably the best video I've made so far. I'm actually very happy with it. I put a little more effort into it. I kind of like pre-typed a little script, kind of edited the video a little more tighter. I think it came out fantastic. I got very positive reviews. So I'm going to be making more videos in that style in the near future. The next video will be on RetoSwap. And I have not started it. I don't think it's going to be out this week. It'll probably be out next week. Just because I got things going on this week. But that is going to be my next video, though. I think RetoSwap will be a good one to do. A lot of people want me to make that. I did put a poll on my Twitter, and that came in first place. So I'm going to do that. Then my video about running a node will be soon. I'll probably make that next. Oh, you know what? I completely forgot to make a chat room on Matrix. Okay, that's gonna be. I'll have that for next week. I gotta put a note down. So I'm gonna write down. I'm gonna underline this and bold this because I friggin' forgot. It's a one man operation here. I don't have an editor, so if I forget things, just like remind me in the comments, and then I'll be like, oh shit, I did promise that like fucking 2 months ago. For this week, on Tuesday this week, I'm going to be talking with Doug Tooman. We're going to have a Monero talk. He's going to be asking me pretty much about the stuff I'm going to be talking about in this episode, on the news that's happened, and probably some other stuff as well. Always a good time talking to Doug, so we're going to do a little episode on Tuesday, so keep an eye out for that. Should be a good time. All right, so let's pivot to Roman Storm. The verdict that came through, and kind of the mixed feelings about it. It wasn't a win, necessarily. It wasn't a loss, necessarily. It was kind of a minor loss, I would say, but also kind of a win. It's hard to describe. We're going to go through it, but basically, there were three counts here. On count one, money laundering, it was a hung jury. There was no verdict. On count two, which was unlicensed money transmission, which was the violation of Section 1960, he was found guilty. And on count three, which was sanctions evasion, he was found, that was a hung jury, so there was no verdict. So basically, on the two serious charges, that by serious, I mean they carried the most time, it was a hung jury. So it was a mistrial, nothing happened. And on the lesser charge, which carries a maximum 5-year sentence, he was found guilty. Now, to back up, the week started and we were in jury deliberations. A lot of anxiety. I mean, I was checking my phone once every hour or so for anything, any type of breadcrumbs. And the one thing was that the jury was definitely taking it seriously. They sent a couple really good questions back. You can tell that they were actually trying here. Now, they did find him guilty on one of these counts. However, I really wouldn't put it on the jury for necessarily getting this wrong. I'll say why once we get to that. But I really do believe they were taking this seriously. This was a contentious trial with a lot of disputes, right? So for example, one of the witnesses was being questioned and, he was talking about how he liked Tornado Cash because he didn't want a target on his back. And that was the phrase that he used when describing his concerns about his privacy. And the prosecution made a big fuss about it, and the judge got mad as well, actually, because it was agreed upon, apparently, that you couldn't have any type of reference to, overreaching privacy concerns. There was an objection because he used this phrase that implied that there would be violence towards him if he didn't use privacy. That's what was going on behind the scenes. There was a lot of contention on just all this different crap that was going on. But this is essentially the backdrop of what's going on here. And another thing, you had this just absurd tracing technique being done in the pig butchering case. And the guy they took to the stand, he didn't even know what an ERC-20 token was. He had this outdated methodology. I don't even know if it is methodology for tracing. That didn't make any sense. It was torn apart online. So, there's just a lot of funky stuff going on with this case. During the trial, too, on, I think it was Tuesday, they had to break early. And the reason for that was because one of the jurors, it was their grandmother's 90th birthday. And in actual fact, it was requested tonight for the juror not even to show up at all because she wanted to get a pedicure with her grandmother, literally a pedicure. And this was turned down by the judge, and it was kind of a funny joke that people were talking about throughout the week. Now, while it is funny, I do want to bring up this point, though, that, these are just regular people. This is just how the jury process works. They just get, normal, regular people. And so even though we live in our cryptocurrency bubble, a peer-to-peer cash bubble, when we're talking to people outside of that bubble, everything we're talking about seems like crazy. And so with this case, it's so complicated that when you're describing what's going on with people who do understand peer-to-peer cash, these people are confused, right? And so then when you're talking to people who are outside of our bubble about this, they're even more confused. So I give them a lot of credit for taking the time, and the questions they asked to the judge, the notes that they wrote, they were all great questions. They asked about the venue. They asked a question about the wallets that were used and how they were linked to, I think it was linked to North Korea, which was directly related to the sanctions evasion. So it's very clear to me that they were thinking about this case and they took it seriously. So while people were making fun of the lady with the pedicure, I think it just kind of just shows that they're just regular people who are taking time out of their lives to do this case. Regarding the counts here, so again, money laundering, hung jury. I mean, that's good, right? They came back, they couldn't determine unanimously that the person was guilty, so that's a win for us, as well as a sanctions evasion. They could not unanimously determine a verdict, so it was a hung jury. Here's the problem. It can be retried. There can be a new trial. The prosecution can yet again file charges, and we'd go through this process again. I know it sucks, but that the DOJ actually has that option. We have not heard whether or not they are going to refile charges, but I would expect them to. Now, I do want to give a shout out to a podcast I listened to after from Bankless HQ. They're on Twitter. At least that's their handle on Twitter. They have a YouTube. So there was this a podcast that they've released after this the verdict. Very good summary of everything. I'll link it in the description of this video. Let me actually write that down here. So anyway, they had a really good summary of everything, so I encourage people to check that out. And yeah, they did talk about like how, you know, the Trump administration, they put out this memo, you know, back in April saying they don't want to try people for, you know, doing pretty much exactly what Roman Storm was doing. But then, like, you know, why did they continue this case, right? Why are they continuing this case with Samurai Wallet, right? Why are they continuing to pursue these things while at the same time saying they don't want to? And it's kind of frustrating, too, because, you know, the podcast I just mentioned, it's a really great summary of things, but, like, you're still hearing these people who are, like, thinking that the state is on potentially, or I should say the state is potentially on our side. They like think that there's reasoning here. And it's very frustrating for me because it's kind of like they're taking the benefit of the doubt with Trump and that, you know, they're doing a lot of good things. And, you know, there's this one thing that this is like banking or crypto report that just went through. And there was some good language on it that these guys in this podcast were like happy about. And, you know, they seemed optimistic of, you know, potentially this ruling being positive and that they aren't going to retry these charges and that an appeal can go through on the charge that did happen. And like, it's frustrating for me because if you're looking at the actual actions of the state, they're continuing to prosecute people who are making privacy tools, like across the board. It's like, don't look at what their words are. Look at their actions. And their actions, the actions show a pattern, is really what I'm trying to say. And so I'm just a little frustrated with that because there's a lot of people in cryptocurrency who just like haven't figured that out yet. Actually, in general, there's just a lot of people who haven't like figured out that like there's no negotiating with these people. You know, I've brought this up before, like don't negotiate with terrorists. This is how I view this with like negotiating privacy. You just don't, you know, you draw a line in the sand and say, listen, free and open source software where we should be able to use that. And if not, fuck off. That's the mindset we should have. It should be within our rights to have encryption. It should be our rights to write code because code is free speech. And, you know, something like this, it's like slowly sinking their talons into our rights and what we have. And yeah, trying to like reason with these people, that's like the Zcash method, and it sucks. It's not working, clearly. So, you know, the way I look at it is possible for a project like Monero to become popular regardless of what they want to try to do. And, you know, perhaps it will pump in the future because it becomes kind of like the resistance in cryptocurrency and people are drawn to its edginess. I believe that's quite possible. But it's also possible that it's just going to be, you know, very much targeted and villainized. And that in itself will just nuke the price. Because if you just remove it from all the exchanges, it's going to be hard to create the momentum of people wanting to go out and buy it because they don't want to break the law. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, realistically, the government going after privacy, it's not going to stop anytime soon. And I just find it to be very optimistic and glass half full, which I at this point, I'm just very black-pilled on this. And I just think that, like, that type of mindset is, frankly, it's dangerous because it's not being rational, in my opinion. Now, the charge for 1960, this is where it gets a little tricky. And by the way, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm referencing this podcast I listened to as a good summary of it. basically, this charge was probably the worst charge that they had here because it's the broadest. And basically, the charge is an unlicensed money transmission. So it's transmitting money without a license and knowing that things were used in a crime. Okay. So basically, you're saying that Roman Storm had this money transmitting service. And because he had that, he should have been aware of people using his service, basically like getting KYC information and abiding by all the KYC regulations that exist currently in like the United States, for example. And by him not doing that, he committed this crime from this antiquated law. Okay. But the thing is, like, the actual definition of what a unlicensed money transmission actually accounts for is it's very different than what FinCEN said. And FinCEN, they put out guidance in 2019, and their whole point was if you don't have independent control of your funds, you're okay. They very clearly said that. And so you had Samurai Wallet, as well as Tornado Cash, going by the guidance. Well, I know, real shocker, right? They're using the guidance they were given by FinCEN. Using that guidance. And, oh no, you broke the law for Section 1960. Even though there's guidance here that says otherwise, well, you broke that law, so we're going to prosecute you for unlicensed money transmission conspiracy charge. These are all conspiracy charges, by the way. So regarding this charge, you might be wondering, so why wasn't this dismissed? Well, back in December of 2024, they attempted to dismiss this. They argued it should be thrown out. And the reason it wasn't was because, this is not verbatim what was said, but basically the criminal code in 1960 has a different definition of money transmission than the BSA, the Bank Secrecy Act. And that is the regulatory code that FinCEN offers guidance for. And so because the criminal code can be applied broader in Section 1960, that means that Tornado Cash is liable for transmitting money without a license. If it sounds crazy, then you're understanding of the situation. like basically, they evidently were following the guidance from FinCEN, which was more recent, but because they weren't following guidance, apparently, because I disagree with that anyways, because the definition, that I don't believe that the Tornado Cash would fall under that anyways, but the prosecution is arguing that the 1960 law overrides the guidance from FinCEN from 2019, which was made, by the way, after cryptocurrency became a thing. So it doesn't really make much sense, because like when the 1960 was written, cryptocurrency didn't even exist. So it doesn't really make much sense, but like that's where it stands. So the reason that count one and count three were a hung jury is because it had a higher bar to prove, whereas section 1960 didn't. So you could argue that the jury, because it was a broader definition, they were kind of just following the rules put out in front of them. And, you know, I don't have the court transcripts in front of me, so I can't really figure it out, but that's kind of the assumption here. That because the bar was lower, he was found guilty for this. Now here's the good news. There's actually relatively good chances that this can get appealed. And the reason for that is because, again, you know, they were following the guidance from FinCEN. And so because of that, because they were actively following the guidance, the charges should have been dismissed back in 2024. Of course, they weren't, but that being the case, they can still appeal this. And in actual fact, the judge who did allow this to continue, she said after the verdict was read, she said that she believes that there's reasonable grounds for an appeal. And in addition to that, I forgot to mention this, after the guilty verdict was given, prosecution moved to have Roman, you know, go to jail immediately. Defense argued, no, he should go back to his family. He's not a flight risk. And the judge was like, oh, no, he can go back to his family. There's still appealing to be done. She emphasized that, you know, this process is not over and this can be appealed. So it actually seemed quite positive from that to that this wasn't over yet. And I don't believe it's over yet because I do believe this will not only be appealed, but I do think it will be retried on those larger counts as well. But we have to wait and see for that. So, yeah, kind of a split decision there. Where I'm happy for Roman though, because he got off on the bigger charges. At least it's a mistrial for now, and you know he's not actually in jail, and they do have reasonable grounds for appeal. The frustrating side though is there was really no verdicts that help us, right? And the one verdict that goes against us is like the freaking most ridiculous one. You know, saying that he's that or like implying that anybody running a service is liable under this. And this just opens the floodgates for other charges that can happen and more KYC and everything. So bit of a, I don't know, split decision. But that's what happened with Tornado Cash. And I do have some breaking news, too. This had literally happened like an hour ago. This came out here. Apparently, an Ethereum developer says they've been detained in Turkey. This is via The Rage. It's just a tweet of someone saying that they were detained. I'm in Turkey, Izmir. They're telling my lawyer that I helped people to misuse Ethereum and I might have a charge. You can imagine what it means. It's obviously wrong. We're just infra builders. I can't say much because I don't have information. And I don't know if I will be able to talk with others. Please talk with... he mentions some people who are probably close to him. And that's it. This is Feeds intern. So yeah, I don't know. It's just broke. So it's possible that, you know, maybe we're being a little jumpy right now because we're kind of seeing if this is going to have an impact on other potential cases. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised though, because they're looking for this foot in the door to prosecute other services. And they really want to clamp down as much as they want on privacy. All right. So in the next topic, Cubic. So, a lot of people think the sky is falling right now.
Beboo, we are all going to die. Beboo.
Yeah, you're not even living, actually. You're just ones and zeros. I'm going to be honest with you guys. It is definitely more concerning than it was like a week ago. They were doing some things, Cubic at least, this week that made this attempt at a 51% attack a little worse, which we'll get to in a sec. And it does seem like they have a decent amount of hash rate. The estimates right now are at 35%, which is actually quite a bit. This is way more than I ever thought they would have. So there are some concerns here with that. And you know, of course, people are freaking out. But overall, like Monero is still in a great position. And the reason there's not like a lot of panic right now, especially from the developers and researchers, is because Cubic has not proven that they have the hash rate. So it's one of those things where I really encourage people, the best way to get back at this is do a couple things. One, mine Monero. Check out my video on Goopax. Start up your node, just mine Monero. Add hash rate. Two, you can rent hash rate during these attacks. You're pissing away money, I'm going to be honest with you, but you can do that, and that is helpful. All the every hash rate you add makes it harder for them. So you can do that as well. And the third thing you can do is not get trolled and baited by them. They want attention, so ignore them. Like I tweeted about this today, kind of just like calming people down. I'm actually going to read the tweet thread. But, you know, I'm doing my best to not sensationalize things. I kind of probably over sensationalized things earlier this week. I really want to tone that down though, because their attack will succeed if there's a lot of attention being given to them. And the good news is, you know, it's kind of becoming old news, right? It's kind of like losing some steam. But like, if we overreact to things, it actually benefits them. So like, don't take the bait, mostly just ignore them. And because they want a reaction, right? So anyways, yeah, we have some more data to look at. They did a full mining on Thursday and Saturday. And on Monday, which is when I'm releasing this podcast, they're doing another 24-hour mining. And yeah, I mean, on Thursday, it was a relatively normal day. But yeah, nighttime, I mean, I was seeing that they were getting a decent amount of blocks, consecutive blocks too. And at one point, they were at like about 42 out of the past 100 blocks were theirs. And this is within their range of probabilities. It's realistic they would reach that if they have like 35%, which is about what I'm estimating. But they did reach that. Same thing happened on Saturday. In fact, they got even higher. This was helped, though, for a couple of reasons. The main reason being that there was another major pool called C3, and their API crashed. So for a period of time, they were mining blocks that were also being reported as unknown, because Cubic, if you weren't aware, they're mining without reporting their API. So they're under the unknown category. So they were kind of combining, like, their blocks were combined with theirs when it was being reported. So it was over-reported, essentially. Still, though, Cubic was mining a lot. Additionally, on Saturday, they started, they started this on Thursday. They started printing empty blocks. And this is actually the first thing I will say that's been, like, definitely negative. Because, you know, they were getting, at some points, like, 5 blocks in a row. And if you're getting 5 blocks in a row and they're all empty blocks, I mean, you're causing network disruptions. So they did succeed in doing that. I mean, we're not talking like hours. You know, we're talking like 12 minutes, right? But it's still something. And I have to say, like, okay, they did manage to do that. And we took an L. So they did do that. They also started attempting orphaning blocks. And this has been mostly unsuccessful. They're trying different things. And in fact, they were actually losing blocks, evidently, according to the information that we have available. It doesn't look like they were that successful in what they were doing. And whatever. Effectively, they stopped even trying to orphan blocks. They're going to try to do something new. Tomorrow, they're promising whatever. They're going to take over the network. It's the same bullshit, really. So they're like attempting different things and doing different things to be annoying, basically. But again, if you weren't even aware of what I'm telling you, right, would you notice anything if you're using Monero? Probably not. And that's kind of the point I'm like really driving here. This attack is kind of just on social media. It's not really being that effective in the real world. It is effective on social media, though, because these guys are annoying. But their actual attack isn't really doing anything. And the reason it's not really doing anything is because they don't have the hash rate. So yeah, they need more hash rate. I don't know how much exactly more they need, but if they're at 35%, it's a pretty sizable amount. Because at 40%, to get to 50%, they would need to increase their hash rate by 50%, if that makes sense. So like really where it stands is if they get a lot more incoming hash rate, they would need a lot more. Then they could successfully 51% attack Monero, or at least they could start to do it. Or if there was a defection of miners going towards them, which we haven't really seen. That would be worse, though, because it would require less going over to them. The problem with Cubic, though, is they need to sustain that. And they have clearly proven they can't do that because they can only do this for 24 hours. And they're probably propping the price up of their coin. And they're doing whatever they can to like keep this going. But like over time, they can't keep this going over time. They can't sustain it. And that's really the problem that they're facing. And that's why this really isn't a problem for Monero, because they're running out of money, essentially. So here's the thread I wrote. The final stage of Kubik's 51% attack will be them claiming they achieved it even though they didn't to save face. Their orphaning strategy did not work yesterday and was losing them blocks, and they've also stopped printing empty blocks. Yeah, they've stopped printing empty blocks, so that's no longer a thing. So no longer a concern. And I continue, they aren't gaining any hash rate. If they show you a pie chart of the last 100 blocks, which in parentheses, ultimately showing that they had a lucky streak, because that's the thing, like, you know, if you show 100 blocks, you can have like lucky streaks where you just get a lot of blocks, right? I then continue, if they do that, show them a pie chart of the last 1,000. This attack is not sustainable unless they gain a lot more hash, and with their halving next week, their profitability narrative will be lost, which is true. They have a halving next week. That should have an impact on the mining. Maybe it won't, but I really believe it will. The next tweet, the majority of people who actively use Monero have no idea this attack is even happening, which is really all that needs to be said. This attack does highlight XMR's general issue of mining pool centralization. And the silver lining is refreshed discussions on hardening this. And this is true. There is a general issue of mining pool centralization that we've had now for years. And this is finally being looked at, which is actually a positive thing. And yeah, last thing, barring a massive increase in Kubik hash rate, either from miner defection or of new miners entering, Monero will be completely fine. And that's pretty much it. So yeah, the reality here, the likely reality here, is that this is someone looking for attention, and they're lying every step of the way. They're not keeping up with any of their promises. They are gaining a lot of hash rate though, and they are getting attention. So my guess is they're gonna do play around with the numbers to make it seem like they successfully attacked Monero. They're gonna successfully 51% attack Monero. See, we did it, guys, and they're gonna stop. That's what I think is going to happen, because like they want to like make this narrative that they actually did attack Monero, even though they didn't. And that's what they're going to end up doing. It's possible they could work and they can gain more hash rate too. It's possible they'll pump from that. I don't understand Moonboyism. I really don't. But this is what I think is going to happen. And we can already kind of see it in play because, you know, this guy, who controls Kubik, he's already made this claim that they had 49% of the hash rate. They did not. You know, they mined 49 blocks out of 100, I think. But again, you can just get lucky. That doesn't really prove that they can 51% attack Monero, or more importantly, they can sustain a 51% attack. Now, should we be concerned? Absolutely. This is a large mining pool that has 35% of the network, and they are actively selfish mining. So this is definitely a concern. It's not something we can just hand wave away or like completely downplay. I've seen some people like say that this is a total nothing burger. Definitely not. This is something, especially when they were printing empty blocks that led to network disruption. But no, this is no longer a situation where they're actually like, where I'm like happy they're mining necessarily. I am happy that the mining network is, you know, larger than it was previously, but they're being assholes essentially, and there's no reason for them to be selfish mining. In fact, I don't even really understand why they need to do that. I guess it's just to get more attention. But whatever, they're just selfish mining, and that's the case. So yeah, we should be concerned, but I really encourage people not to panic. They have not proven that they have the hash rate. And the thing is, all the Monero researchers, and I am lurking their chats, they're not really that concerned. And they also have internal information that they're working with. And really the gist here is that they need a lot more hash rate. So because of that, it's one of those things where they're just running out of steam and we just got to wait it out. So anyways, we shall see how their attack goes tomorrow. Or it's going to be happening when you're hearing this podcast for the first time on Monday. We'll see how that goes. I am predicting more of the same, where, you know, they mine a decent amount relative to how much really we would ideally have them mine, but, you know, it's nothing that's going to take over the network, and they'll probably exaggerate the claims of what's happening. And we'll see what they do after that. I really think that they're going to probably stop sooner than later. And if not, it might just be a month where we're just going to have to deal with this annoyance. I don't think they're going to really be doing this into September. Maybe they will. I don't know. Maybe this will just be a thorn in our side for a while. But whatever. So that's Cubic. We'll have more information next week because we should have a lot more data. All right, next up, TradeOgre. It's still down. That's the update. It's still down. No idea why. No news came out. Very suspicious. Extremely suspicious, to be honest. The timing of that going down with Majestic Bait going down, with all this stuff going through with Tornado Cash and Samurai. It's bad news. I'm going to be honest with you guys, bad news. So I'm not really sure what happened there, but I am thinking I'm leaning towards some sort of Feds situation with, I don't know, maybe the lack of KYC finally got to them. And yeah, if they go down for non-KYC, I don't know. I have a feeling that a lot of these coin swap sites are on the chopping block. Now, Monero news, the price did dump this past week, and probably as a reaction to just everything I've talked about so far, you know, Tornado Cash ruling, you know, TradeOgre going down, maybe TradeOgre is selling their funds. I've heard that theory, but also just the fact that TradeOgre and Majestic Bank went down recently, the Cubic situation. There's just a lot of FUD in the air, and it's led to a sell-off. Pretty bad sell-off, honestly. Yeah, I mean, these things happen. So, I mean, I would argue that if you are a Monero bull, you're probably pretty happy right now because you can slurp up some cheapies. But this is kind of just market weirdness happening. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is a wonder, like, if, you know, a 51% attack were to happen, how low would the Monero price go? You know, would it go down to like 200, 150 maybe? I'm not really sure. You know, it's one of those things where it could happen, you know. And if it does happen, obviously there's going to be a lot of discussion that will have to occur after that. And, you know, changes will have to be made. And it's going to suck, but we'll have to go through with it, you know. But Monero's going to survive is the thing. So, you know, I know, again, people are panicking about the whole Cubic situation, but it's kind of just like, one, they haven't really proven anything, and two, like, even if they are able to, like, very briefly do some weird stuff, right, it's not really the end of the world. You know, there's much bigger fish to fry, and again, the majority of people who use Monero have no idea this is even going on, okay? And that's not going to change in the future, most likely. So yeah, I mean, the dump maybe inspired by that kind of concern, this lingering concern of a 51% attack. I also think the Tornado Cash thing, though, has a lot to do with it. You know, Monero represents the counterculture in cryptocurrency, therefore, you know, the Feds are targeting it. It creates this just negative feedback loop. And Monero is unique in that because most of the other privacy projects in the space are cucked. All right, Coin Cards had a security incident that they disclosed on August 4, 2025. Basically, a vulnerability in one of their systems was exploited, affecting 6 user accounts, no more. The total financial impact was in the tens of thousands of dollars, and they were not able to recover most of it. I guess they could only recover a small portion. The vulnerability was patched. They reimbursed anybody affected. They're doing an audit. The attacker behind the incident used privacy-preserving tools to carry out the fraud, mainly Monero. You know, and the one thing that's kind of weird, though, is in their statement, they say, quote, "What makes this especially difficult is that it came from within a community we've stood beside and supported for years. It's disappointing and frankly disheartening that someone would use Monero to steal a significant amount from a small, hardworking team like ours. We're not a VC-funded company. We don't have a safety net. In the gift card space, especially a crypto-native business, fraud insurance simply doesn't exist. They need $500,000 in gift cards to offset the damage." I understand their frustration. I don't know why they kind of said that it came from somebody within the community. I mean, it was a hacker, dude. I mean, it was someone who exploited your system and they used Monero. It's like the Monero community is like one thing. Those are the people who are like adjacent to the project. But Monero itself is a commodity, essentially. It's digital cash. And it's used by everybody, you know, all types of people. And in this case, yeah, whatever happened with this exploit, they got hit pretty hard. And I feel bad for them, though. I mean, I love coin cards. I've used them a lot. So I'm going to be buying a few gift cards this week to help them out. So if you do have, you know, gift cards that you need to purchase, coin cards is, they're looking for your money. All right, so the last thing we're going to talk about is Nick Fuentes talking about Monero. So yeah, this happened a couple days ago, and it's a very positive clip. He's basically talking about how people who just find out about like surveillance and stuff, they go into like total schizo mode. It's a funny bit, and Nick Fuentes, for what it's worth, he's a pretty funny he's basically a comic. Like he has a lot of funny material, and he mentions about, you know, if you use, you know, banking or whatever, they know everything unless you use like Monero, and he talks about Monero real briefly, and then how Monero is also being attacked with, you know, KYC and on and off ramps, which is totally true. So he's clearly aware of Monero and the attacks going on. Maybe he's an anti-moon boy. I don't know. That would be funny. That would be hilarious. But he seems to actually understand the issues pretty well. And the thing about Fuentes is he has a ton of influence right now. He's probably the most influential 20-something in politics right now. He is becoming pretty huge. So this is a snowball effect where, because Monero has this clout as the darknet cryptocurrency, now when other people want to appear intelligent, they mention Monero when they're talking about cryptocurrency you want to use privately. That's what's happening. And I'm not saying that, you know, someone who does that is stupid and that they're trying to appear intelligent. No, that is the intelligent thing to say. It's kind of like when you observe the free market and you observe what actually is being used, you're understanding how the world works, right? And so in this case with Fuentes, I don't know if he uses Monero. Maybe he does. I don't know. But he has heard over time, maybe not, he doesn't even know about the darknet, but he knows just by hearing other people talking about Monero's usage, he knows this is what people are using. He's figured that out. And so now when he is trying to perpetuate this idea of you can't transact privately, what's the counter argument to that? He knows, well, it's Monero. And my assumption is that he's picked this up because over time, Monero has built up this clout and this reputation and essentially a network effect. And now Monero, whenever you think about privacy and cryptocurrency, Monero is right there. And yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, that doesn't just go away. It's there. And it takes a while to get to that point. But Monero accomplished that because of its cypherpunk roots, its use cryptocurrency first attitude, and not complying. Okay. Not bending the knee to compliance and fighting back. Because when you go down that path of complying, that's when you get the Michael Saylors dominating the narrative. You want the narrative to be, whoa, this is edgy. Because that's when you're actually digital cash. Because anything else is just a tech stock. Okay, that's enough of this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Antimoonboy.com. I got merch, by the way. If you want to buy some merch, support the show. Antimoonboy.com/merch. You can send a super chat to xmrchat.com/Xenu. And yeah, that's the show. Have a great week.